Be a part of the best pro wrestling podcast today by supporting the Going In Raw Patreon. You can enjoy access to the live taping of the show, exclusive merchandise, and patron-only episodes, and so much more. Support Going In Raw today. Click the link in the description. Hey, friendo, Steve here.
And Larson. And welcome to Going In Raw Countout. One of two pro wrestling podcasts that count things down that we know of. There might be more.
Could be more.
Could be more. Could be a lot more. We just don't know.
Yeah.
So we just recently went to our very first pro wrestling guerrilla show.
That is correct.
And we saw Cody Rhodes.
Yes.
Who
yes.
used to be in WWE.
Yes, he did.
And then left WWE to do other things.
And he seems to be enjoying great success. To be honest, watching him at PWG Live, it looks like the man has a weight off his shoulders.
Yes, he looks like he's having an absolute blast wrestling.
Correct.
So that got us to thinking about 10 other former WWE superstars who went on to better things after the WWE.
Nine other, because we're including Cody Rhodes in this list. That's right.
Steve's right. Nine other.
It just got us. Oh, and by the way, my voice is shot. We're shooting this on a day where my voice is still shot. Good job on the intro. But yeah, it got us thinking on the drive back. What other wrestlers might be doing better without the, you know, the WWE way of life is, it does not appear to be an easy one.
Taxing, both mentally, physically, emotionally.
Tons of travel.
A grueling schedule in terms of the number of matches you have to work a year, upwards of 200 if you are working full time.
Right, exactly. And while the rewards can be plentiful, like you said, it can be very taxing on you. And some wrestlers simply seem to thrive more without the constraints of the WWE system, without that system. And so there does seem to be more of a move these days towards guys who, when you leave the WWE, you know, you could do better for yourself.
Yeah, you establish a name for yourself, a brand. Right. You can take that brand out into the world. Mm-hmm. And more or less dictate your terms.
Right, exactly.
And achieve, in several cases, pretty good success.
Let's go with number 10.
10.
Ryback.
Yeah, so let's take a look at what he accomplished during his time with WWE. Mm-hmm. He was a tough enough contestant way back in 2004.
What was he going by back then? Skip Sheffield?
No, I think he was Ryan Reeves.
Oh, okay, so he was keeping it real back then.
I think
then.
So.
Okay.
And then he spent some time in OVW, one of WWE's developmental territories from 2006 to 2008, where he won the OVW title.
Yep.
Also spent time in Florida Championship Wrestling, the precursor to NXT,
right.
2008 to 2010. And he came to the main roster as part of the Nexus. There he was Skip Sheffield.
That's where he was Skip Sheffield.
So he was involved in that storyline, and one of the members of the group that got buried by John Cena at SummerSlam that year.
Right.
And then he broke his ankle in August of 2011.
He's quite top heavy.
That's true. But he does. He looks like he does do leg day.
Yeah, yeah.
And that injury required three surgeries.
Ouch.
And he was out until he made his main roster debut as Ryback in April of 2012.
Which was like a throwback gimmick to Goldberg.
Yeah, he would just come out and destroy a bunch of jobbers.
A bunch of squash matches.
Series of squash matches, yeah.
Yeah.
He got popular enough that by October of 2012, he was challenging CM Punk for the WWE title. Now, if I remember correctly, John Cena got injured.
Yes, correct.
And was supposed to feud with CM Punk.
Correct, yeah.
But because he got hurt, he couldn't, so Ryback was kind of the hot thing.
Stepped up.
Yep, they put him into that feud.
Yep.
This Hell in a Cell match that took place between the two of them was not very good.
No.
Ryback suffered his first loss in this match, ending his 38-match undefeated streak.
Did you hear that Asuka's on the verge of beating Goldberg's fake streak?
I know.
She's on the verge of beating it for real.
I know.
Great is that.
It's fantastic. So he was in a pretty prolonged feud with CM Punk for the for most of the last quarter of 2012.
And of course, that's where CM Punk, after he left / got fired from the company, he had quite a few words about Ryback and how unsafe of a worker he was.
Well, it was during this feud that Ryback attacked CM Punk, powerbombed through a table, and legit injured CM Punk's knee.
Yeah, yeah.
That kept him on the shelf for a few months. After that feud ended, Ryback turned heel following WrestleMania 29.
Mm-hmm.
wasn't a very successful heel turn.
A decision he wasn't very happy with. Also, he said that since then.
No, he was not. He turned face again, won the Intercontinental title at Elimination Chamber 2015. It's the only belt he won during his time in WWE.
Mm-hmm.
Dropped it to Kevin Owens the following September.
And to be honest, that was kind of when Ryback had the IC title. That was kind of the last time the IC title didn't really mean shit. Because it was one of those things where they were trying to get him over as a heel, and so they put the belt on him. That much was kind of obvious. It's not like, oh.
No, no. Was he a heel by then? Because he was back to doing the Feed Me More stuff.
Oh, he had, yeah. He like sort of started wearing simpler outfits. Like, it wasn't that where you like went from a singlet to trunks?
That was when he turned heel after this, when he was feuding with Kalisto. Oh, okay. I think he was still wearing the airbrush singlet.
Oh, okay. My memory of Ryback. But anyways, I remember, I'll put it this way. At no time when Ryback held the IC title was the IC title ever special. When Kevin Owens got it from him, that's when it started being that there hasn't been like a crap IC champion since, and there hasn't been anybody who hasn't really earned the title and made that title into something.
Kevin Owens, when he had the belt, made the title feel important because it was important to him.
It was important to him, exactly. Yeah.
And then on May 2nd, 2016, Ryback announced that he was leaving WWE due to a contract dispute. It was kind of unclear whether he was the one to walk out or WWE said, don't come back. Anyways, regardless of which scenario was the case, it was involving a contract dispute.
Right, right.
And he officially was released by the company on August 5th of 2016.
Now, if he just decided to stop working... I'm trying to remember if there's any precedent for that, if there's any like past situations, and I'm sure our comments might light up at this point. But if he decided, if they said, hey, we want to bring you in for TV on this date, and if he said, I'm not going to do that, A, he'd probably be, I would imagine he'd be in breach of contract or something. And then B, wouldn't they then be able to like extend his contract by a certain number of days? I thought I remember hearing something about like with Rey Mysterio.
Yeah, because he was hurt.
Because he was hurt, then they can extend the contract.
But CM Punk
or
walked out on WWE while still under contract too.
Yeah, that's true.
But
that's
But the gist I get is that he must have negotiated a release.
Yeah.
Or that's just when his contract ran out, and WWE said, "All right, we're done with you."
In the case of Ryback.
Yes.
Yeah, because I remember seeing his Instagram post on August 5th, 2016. Where he future endeavored the WWE.
Correct.
And then I think like the next day there was another Instagram post where he went to El Pollo Loco and said, feed me more.
And since then, Ryback has done a lot to build up his personal brand.
He's been very smart about this.
Yeah, he has. During his time in WWE, he trademarked Feed Me More and something else. And WWE tried to trademark Ryback, but the court said no because it's a fairly common surname. You can't trademark surnames.
Yeah.
Since then, Ryback has changed his first name legally to Ryback.
Yeah. Shades of the Ultimate Warrior, again, the person that he's been compared to.
Yes. And he's actually launched several products. He has a bit of a mini Ryback empire forming here.
Mm-hmm.
That's not even having to do a whole lot with wrestling.
Ryback NC.
Yeah. he launched a nutritional supplement line. He launched his podcast, Conversations with the Big Guy.
In which he takes every opportunity possible to drop, you know, little tidbits of backstage.
Oh, every episode.
Every episode you get more. It's like a new shoot interview every
single
time.
Pretty much. I mean, he'll go and he's talked extensively about, you know, like his terms he wanted and how he felt that he was underpaid, which...
He said, they're offering me $3 million, and he said the vast majority of that go to travel costs and taxes, which didn't really break down.
Didn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah, it didn't make a lot of sense.
Because he can write off all those travel expenses and lower his tax bill.
Exactly.
He also wrote a self-help book entitled Wake Up, It's Feeding Time, a professional athlete's advice on how to succeed in the game of life.
What publishing company published that?
Let me check. Archangel Inc.
Oh, that's so it actually had. I'm surprised right now. Archangel Inc. Hold on. Angel.
Did you think it might be self-published?
Yes, that I really thought that was going to be the case. Archangel. Oh, Archangel Inc. is your full service gas station for self-publishing success. So it
was self-published.
All right.
Okay. In terms of wrestling, actual wrestling, Ryback has worked fairly consistently.
Yeah, he said. He said he charged like $4,500
an appearance
for an appearance, which is look. I like to clown Ryback because it's funny, but if he's able to like do a once a week show, fuck. Good for him.
I know.
That's fantastic. That's awesome. And if people buy into his nutritional supplements.
Even twice a month.
Yeah, I know.
That's pretty good.
That's pretty damn good. I know. Exactly.
Especially he lives in Nevada. There's no state income tax there.
Oh, that's nice. Good for him.
But he is the current Heroes and Legends Wrestling Champion.
Where do they wrestle?
I have no idea.
No clue? No. Okay. Look, I think it's fantastic. Ryback did what you should do if you ever get released from a company. I look at Ryback and I think about us because I'm like, you know, we got laid off from Machinima.
Yeah.
And we did our damnedest to build our brand.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And look at us now.
Yeah.
You know, we're completely.
We believed in ourselves, much like Ryback.
Exactly.
Believed in himself.
We thought
he believed
could
in
be...
himself enough to write a book about it. Exactly. Should we write a book about it?
Yes, obviously. What would book be called?
Is there a going in raw pun we can use?
Oh, I don't know, man. It would have. Well, his is Wake Up, It's Feeding Time.
Yeah, it's one of his catchphrases.
Right. I don't know. It's Hey, look, it's milling about time.
Well, that's not what we did. We work.
Milling about.
We work hard.
Yeah, we do. I don't know. We'll think about the...
Yeah, we'll write a book someday.
Going in book.
Learning in raw.
Learning in raw. There you go. I like that.
Sure.
So, yeah, Ryback, good job. Doesn't need the WWE. Making good change on his own.
One would hope, yes.
Evidently.
Where is his podcast on the iTunes charts?
I know we were like number 134 today.
As long as we're charting, that's
as long as we're charting, that's
me.
Good. I just would rather chart more.
Oh yeah.
Let's see. Where is the big guy? Because the big guy, we flutter up and down. Sometimes we're over the big guy, and sometimes we're jobbing to the big guy. I'm looking through the charts. I'm in the 60s. Come on, big guy. Come on, Ryan Reeves. Where are you? He is at. Number 112. He's at 112 and going in raw is currently at 143. Oh, no.
Well, he's doing something right.
He's doing something right. Good for maybe in the latest episode he gave another little shoot story about Triple H and how Triple H wants to screw other wrestlers.
Oh,
over.
Yeah. How they, they don't want another John Cena.
They don't want another John Cena, according to Ryback.
Or how he was supposed to squash AJ Styles at WrestleMania.
Exactly. But no, I really do. Like when the trademark stuff happened with Ryback.
Oh, yeah.
I was really impressed.
Yeah, he had the foresight to take care of that stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
In the event that he was not working with WWE anymore, and he could hold on to his brand, because usually WWE is really good when they create an IP, they hold on to it.
Right, yeah.
So
it's
good on
funny.
Ryback.
Like the bottom line with me on Ryback is he saw much more in himself as a wrestling character than I did.
Mm-hmm.
However, he has seemingly transformed that into a very successful post-WWE career, and awesome for him.
Yep.
I think it's actually a pretty inspirational story. Number nine.
Nine.
Ivelisse.
Yeah. Most of us know of Ivelisse from her time in Lucha Underground.
Correct.
But she spent some time in WWE Developmental. First, she competed in the 2011 edition of Tough Enough.
Yes.
And then following that, she was signed to a contract and worked for Florida Championship Wrestling and NXT from 2011 and 2012.
Mm-hmm.
And she suggested that on Vince Russo's podcast, The Brand, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that, the brand, bro.
That one of, if not the reason she was released in NXT from NXT in 2012 is because she was the first wrestler to report of Bill DeMont's behavior to management.
Which, for those of you who don't know, Bill DeMont, of course, was Hugh Morris.
Yes.
Back in WCW. He was hired to run, I think he was like the head coach at the Performance Center.
Yeah, he, whatever Matt Bloom's role is now, that was...
But there was all sorts of accusations about hazing, about racially insensitive comments, about...
All sorts of mistreatment of the wrestlers.
So that's what she says, that's why she was released. Since then, she's worked in a slew of other promotions, including Family Wrestling Entertainment. Is that like a sister promotion of Fun Wrestling?
No.
No?
Okay. We have no affiliation with that company.
Okay.
But another wrestler on this list, John Hennigan, yes. Johnny Mundo,
yeah.
At one time was the Family Wrestling Entertainment champion. He still might be.
Oh.
Eva Lis was at one time their women's champion.
Gotcha.
She's wrestled for AAA.
Yeah.
Shine, where she's a two-time champion and had a brief appearance or two in TNA.
Yeah.
But as I said earlier, she is most well-known for her time in Lucha Underground, mm-hmm. when herself, Angelico, and Son of Havoc became Lucha Underground's first trios champions. Now, they don't have a tag team division. They have a trios division.
Mm-hmm.
And that's actually a title that she has won twice.
Yeah.
With Angelico and Son of Havoc. And towards the beginning of the second season, she won a triple threat match against Angelico and Son of Havoc. And that led to a match against Mil Mortis,
mm-hmm.
who at the time was Lucha Underground champion.
Mm-hmm.
So pretty cool.
She was also on an episode of Tattoo Nightmares that I happened to catch. Have you heard of Tattoo Nightmares? Okay, it's when you have like a crap tattoo and then you want to get it changed into something good. And they always have these... They have like a really good story that they then reenact with like really cheesy actors.
Oh, about what led to the tattoo?
Yeah, they like purposefully do really cheesy reenactments.
Yeah.
But it's a fun show, and then it always has like a really cool tattoo finish in the end, and they're always very happy about it. Well, she was on there because she had like some sort of like fire crotch tattoo happening that they then transformed into something cooler. She was like, yeah, when I'm wearing my wrestling tights, like you see like fire coming like from my crotchal area. She's like, I don't want that anymore.
Yeah.
And it was very charming. She was very charming on the show. So it was cool to watch that. And I was like, she looks very familiar. And then
yeah.
I realized she was on Lucha Underground.
Yeah.
So good for her.
Yeah.
Number eight.
Eight.
Trent Beretta. That's right.
So he, I was looking into his story today. He's still only 29 years old.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Man.
And he's been wrestling for a long time.
He's 39.
I know. He signed with FCW, again, the precursor NXT, WWE yeah. Developmental Territory, in 2007.
10 years ago.
10 years ago.
Jeez.
Yeah. And he wrestled there from 2007 to 2009, where he formed the Dude Busters with Kalen Croft.
Who's now an elementary school teacher.
Interesting.
Yeah, he retired from the business.
And the two of them made their main roster debuts. They dropped the Dude Buster name on ECW in December of 2009.
Mm-hmm.
And following the end of ECW, they were brought over to SmackDown.
Yes.
And it took them about, I don't know, like 6 months or something like that to win their first match on SmackDown. They were kind of like a jobber tag team.
Oh, that's not kind of. That is yeah, firmly pretty much. Jobber tag team.
And they beat the Gatecrashers.
Who in the fuck?
Vance Archer and Curt Hawkins.
Oh, well, I know the second guy.
I really didn't watch wrestling much back then.
I kind of remember.
And then following Cross release, Beretta was just mostly a jobber. But he did happen to pick up a win over Drew McIntyre on SmackDown, which apparently was his only win as a singles competitor on SmackDown. He won some matches on Main Event and Superstars.
Oh, okay. All right. But, well, hey, those are wins.
Exactly.
Wins.
And then he got sent back to NXT in 2012 before eventually being released from his WWE contract in early 2013.
Mm-hmm. Since he's left, he has wrestled for a number of promotions,
yes.
Including PWG, forming the Best Friends with Chuck Taylor.
Yeah, we just saw him at Only Kings Understand Each Other, put on mm-hmm. a great match against Rey Fenix.
Oh, yeah, it was fantastic.
And
it was
at the end of the show, Best Friends reunited.
Mm-hmm, that's
where,
right.
Where Trent came out and made the save when Marty Scurll and Zack Sabre Jr. were attacking Chuck Taylor.
Mm-hmm. And they're going to be fighting in the next PWG show
yep.
in March.
In 2015 in Ring of Honor, Rocky Romero formed Roppongi Vice mm-hmm. with Trent Beretta.
Yes.
And they've gone on to win the IWGP Junior Tag Team titles three times. The mm-hmm. first from the Young Bucks at Invasion Attack 2015. They beat Ricochet and Matt Sydal
mm-hmm.
at Invasion Attack 2016. And most recently at Wrestle Kingdom 11. They beat the Young Bucks again yeah. to capture the junior tag titles for the third time.
Really fun match, which featured Trent Beretta jumping out and launching himself out of the ring and landing on absolutely nothing.
Well, he landed on the floor.
He landed on
if
the floor.
If
yeah.
he landed on nothing, he'd still be falling.
He'd just still be falling, yeah, infinitely.
But yeah, he just took the bump.
He found floor.
Completely on floor.
Nobody helped him out on that
no.
one.
It looked very uncomfortable.
It looked very painful. Which is probably why he looks 39 and not 29.
But the work he's done, especially just, you know, when we saw him at PWG, we were really impressed.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely.
By all his little character work he does during matches. It's outstanding.
And learning more about him and Rocky Romero and Roppongi Vice and their deal. After watching, you know, a couple New Japan shows, this is one of the fun bits about learning about a new promotion is, oh, you know, look at this guy. He's kind of cool. What's his story? Oh, he was in WWE. Interesting. Yeah. So, he's been around for a long time. Hopefully, he'll be around for a lot longer.
Yes.
Number seven.
Seven.
Johnny Mundo, also known as John Morrison, also known as John Hennig.
He had a very successful, extremely successful WWE career.
Oh, yeah, big time. Yeah, he, let's see here.
He won Tough Enough Season 3.
Uh-huh.
Won the Tag Team Championships on SmackDown as M&M with Joey Mercury and Melina.
And he was Johnny Nitro.
And then he was redubbed John Morrison, became the ECW champion.
Mm-hmm, correct.
After that, he teamed up with The Miz, won the World Tag Titles.
Yeah.
He is a three-time Intercontinental champion, and he did get some title shots, world title shots, but never captured the belt.
The first match after WrestleMania 28, when The Miz retained against John Cena, thanks to help from The Rock.
Yeah, he got in a program with Morrison. Yeah,
yeah. There was a triple threat. I think the rematch was a triple threat.
In Morrison, Cena, and The Miz. Right?
I want to say it was like a cage match.
Yeah, it was a cage match.
So, So he had his fair share of, and then he ended up being sort of the celebrity guy because him and Trish Stratus and Snooki took on, I forget who. At
it was Dolph.
Was it Dolph?
And
might have was like Vicky Guerrero involved or something.
Maybe. I don't remember.
Yeah.
I don't remember.
I don't know. I don't think I watched that one. Or if I did, I fast forward to that shit.
It's a very short match.
But he was definitely, and he also had his Royal Rumble spots, the same as Kofi Kingston has. He had his fair share of very fun, very cool Royal Rumble spots. Kind of interesting. I'm not sure if he would have stuck around, if he would have gone the route of Dolph and had just been perennial almost ran or also ran, or if he would have ever broken through the ceiling. I don't know.
He to this day still is a really exciting wrestler to watch.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Super athletic.
Yeah.
Does some fun stuff in the ring.
Yeah.
Decent psychology.
Yeah.
But he left.
So there was according to him on the Stone, he went on the Stone Cold Steve Austin podcast. He had a 3-year contract on the table. I'm sorry, a 3-year contract offer on the table from the WWE. He decided to walk away, though. He had a busted neck. He had frustrations with creative. Evidently, he did feel there was a ceiling there for him. And the quote is, he wanted to gain more control over his time. A guy that wrestles like that.
Yes.
It's probably, I would imagine, it's logical to think it would be much more difficult to maintain the WWE schedule.
Yes.
Than a guy who's like, you know, a brawler, for example.
Yeah.
You know, because if you're doing all high-flying stuff.
250 days a year, it's going to take a toll on your body.
That's going to take a massive toll on your body, exactly. And especially if you're experiencing frustrations moving up the ladder, then that's going to, I'd imagine it's probably not that difficult to walk away from that.
Yeah. Since his time in WWE, he's wrestled all over the place. Most prominently in Lucha Underground, where he is only one of two wrestlers to win their Triple Crown. He's won the world title, I think, twice.
Yeah.
If not, once for sure. The Gift of the Gods title and the Trios titles.
Mm-hmm.
And he just, towards the end of this last year, he had a pretty intense feud with Sexy Star,
that's right.
On Lucha Underground. He's wrestled for AAA.
Yep.
Where he took part in both the 2015 and 2016 Lucha Libre World Cup, winning it in 2016.
He is the current AAA Latin American champion, and it's his first reign after winning the title at AAA's Triple Mania 24, and he was also the first non-Mexican to hold the AAA Latin American championship in history. So that's kind of cool. And you also see him in, like, little bits here and there. Who did he play? I forget. Who did he play? And he was in that Max Landis Triple H short film, and I forget. Did he play? I forget who he played.
Yeah,
it's on like the tip of my tongue, but I forget. I don't know. But anyways, he was in that. The point is, he sort of gets around the sort of YouTube circles because he's also in Bat in the Sun, who does like basically comic book based fanfic films.
Yeah,
Like really high production.
Yeah, high production value, high quality stuff. Yeah.
He played Casey Jones from the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles fighting against Kick-Ass in one of them. And then he was the Winter Soldier taking on Nightwing in an episode that they did. And then he'll be portraying, this is fucking obscure, he's going to be portraying Eternal Warrior in the web series Ninjak versus the Valiant Universe. You were always a Valiant fan, weren't you? That was always your gag, right? Whenever somebody would say, what comic books did you like? And you always say Valiant.
Because they were portrayed as quality investments. Because the early issues had really short runs.
Yeah.
So they're, you know, people saw them as you know, investments because they were hard to get. They were hard to
find.
Wizard
Magazine had you thinking.
Yeah, they were going to pay for my college someday or my kids' college.
Ooh, sorry.
Turns out that wasn't the case.
Apparently not.
So I have like 3 issues of Bloodshot number 1 with the chrome cover.
Yeah.
Just sitting in my room at my parents' house.
They probably made a million of those things, man.
Oh, yeah.
Worth nothing. Let's see here. Number 6.
6.
Cody Rhodes. Cody fucking Rhodes.
Yeah, Cody had a really long career in WWE. Starting in 2006 when he joined up with OVW. He was there for about a year before making his main roster debut in July of 2007, where he faced Randy Orton in his debut match. That was actually a week later, sorry, on July 9th. By the end of 2007, he had won the tag team titles with Bob Holly.
Mm-hmm, yes.
And then the following year, in 2008, he formed Legacy.
Legacy.
With Randy Orton and Ted DiBiase, a faction that eventually disbanded in 2010.
Yes.
And I believe Rhodes and DiBiase had some matches against DX, right?
Yeah, they did. Yeah,
it was like a Hell in a Cell match. I think it was them. And then following that faction breaking up, he started the Dashing Cody Rhodes gimmick.
Yeah, he was really, really finding his stride at this point.
Yep.
Like, he was so good.
Because that's when he was handing out the paper bags.
Right, right.
And then I think the following year, Rey Mysterio broke his nose.
That's right, yeah.
And after he came back from that, he had the face mask, and then he was, you know, thinking he was horribly disfigured and stuff like that.
Yeah,
he was doing some really good character work.
No, it was 2010, 2011. Yeah,
it was really good. In August of 2011, he won
when he came out. Didn't they have like on his little video package thing, like behind him, they had like a mirror and his face in it or something when he was dashing Cody Rhodes?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, yeah.
He's got such a great face, too.
I know. In August 2011, he won the Intercontinental title from Ezekiel Jackson, and he held the belt till WrestleMania 28 when he lost it to The Big Show.
He was the one, wasn't he the one who made the strap
white?
Belt? Yeah. Yep,
which is still to this day.
Looks beautiful.
He had a brief feud with Booker T.
Mm-hmm.
And then he won the tag team titles with his brother Goldust.
Yeah.
On October 14th. 2013, defeating Roman Reigns and Seth Rollins, the Shield.
Yeah.
And that was during the storyline where he was fired by the Authority, and then he and Goldust won his spot back in the company. Back when it seemed like they were going to get Cody and Goldust and Dusty involved in the whole Authority storyline.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, that really didn't go anywhere. And they debuted the Stardust gimmick in July of 2014, an episode of Raw.
Much to his chagrin, apparently, because they, you know, he thought that they were going to do that thing with the Authority, and then instead they came to him and said, you're just going to be Goldust 2.0.
Yeah.
And, you know, but to his credit, anything he touched, he gave it his all.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and like that Stardust thing, you would never know that he wasn't into the Stardust thing.
I know.
Because he was all into it when the cameras rolled. He really killed it.
He was a really... Still is a great performer.
Yeah.
And he gives it his all. You can tell he gives it his all.
I really wonder if... We'll get to what he's done since then in a bit. I really wonder if he... Stone Cold said this. He says, you know, Cody should have waited till after the brand split just to see what would have happened. And it really makes me wonder...
If he'd been drafted to SmackDown, if he could have had a Miz-like resurgence.
Mm-hmm.
Entirely possible.
Yeah. Yeah.
But at the same time, I remember he's told a story about how his dad, Dusty, went up to him after WrestleMania 28, I believe, so when he dropped the IC title.
Right.
And Dusty advised him to leave then.
You know, Big Show, he dropped the IC title, the Big Show, but Cody, we talked about this earlier with Ryback. As opposed to Ryback, Cody really made something out of that IC title.
Oh, yeah.
He really made it special. And then he put it on a guy like the Big Show. If you had said, who did he lose the IC title to? I'd never know. because I know the Big Show didn't do anything with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, kind of ridiculous. So he left the WWE.
On May 22nd, 2016, after tweeting that he had asked for his release the previous day.
And in less than a year, he's done a lot. He's the current WCPW Internet champ.
Well, shortly after his departure from WWE, he posted this picture on Twitter.
Yes.
Which was kind of a wish list of things that he wanted to do now that he was free to do what he wanted.
Right.
And here, let's run down the items on this list and see what he's accomplished.
Okay.
Top. First thing, Adam Cole.
He wanted to become Adam Cole.
He wanted to wrestle Adam Cole.
Okay.
I don't know if he's wrestled Adam Cole yet.
Well, they're in a faction together called Bullet Club.
But prior to that, prior to Cody joining Bullet Club.
I don't remember. I don't think so because I don't remember it. But I could be wrong.
Yeah, I'll have to look into that. He wanted to wrestle Dalton Castle.
Don't know if he's done that yet, but now that he's in Bullet Club, he
could
do that.
Third on the list, Bola, which he did. He took part in the Battle of Los Angeles tournament last year.
Yes.
Probably will this year.
Yes.
Angle, he wanted to wrestle Kurt Angle. That he's done.
He did that, yep.
Chris Hero, he wrestled Chris Hero.
Okay.
The Miracle, Mike Bennett. I think he's done some work with him in TNA.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
He's aligned with Moose in TNA right now, I believe.
Oh, okay, there you go. That's on the list.
Pat Buck.
I don't know.
The streamers thing, New Japan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, now he considers New Japan his
home base.
His home base.
He just recently said. The Young Bucks, he's Bullet Club.
Aligned with them, yeah.
Trevor Lee, just wrestled him. Shibata.
Oh, no. You don't take that out. You don't want to do that.
No, do it. It'd be great.
That's terrifying.
Personal ring announcer, which his wife.
Oh, yeah.
Has done for him.
That's right. Correct.
And then lastly on this list is Roderick Strong.
Well,
unless he got to wrestle in Ring of Honor.
There's a problem with that there.
Before he signed with WWE, that probably didn't happen.
It probably didn't happen.
So in the span of about less than a year, he's managed to do a lot of these.
Yeah.
And I would suspect by the time this year, calendar year is over, he might be able to get all of these checked off except for Roderick Strong.
Yeah.
Unless he resigns with WWE, it's not going to happen.
Is Cody Rhodes confirmed NXT? Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, and granted, he's only been at WWE for a few months, 8 months, 9 months, whatever it is. 9 months. And he hasn't won any titles.
Yeah.
I mean, he lost to Trevor Lee at PWG.
Yeah.
But you can't really, he might not have, like Drew Galloway, we'll get to this in a second. As soon as he left WWE or was released, he started having great title success.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
But I think for Cody, I'm sure financially he's fine.
Oh, yeah.
He's had a decent career in WWE in terms of winning titles. Seems like right now he just wants to go out and enjoy wrestling.
Yeah.
And you can't really put a price tag on that.
Yeah.
So, and if his list here is what he's going by in terms of accomplishments, 9 months in, he's already doing a great job.
Yeah, exactly. He's going to have to come up with another bucket list soon. It's going to be Wrestle Kingdom. Well, he did that.
Main event.
IWGP.
Okada.
Intercontinental. Yeah, Okada, exactly.
There Naito. Okada.
Naito. Elgin.
First Shibata, and then he'll start going after...
Suzuki.
Goto. Going after some belts in New Japan.
Monster Morning guy, Nakanishi.
Mm-hmm.
Number five.
Five.
Ethan Carter III. So he was in NXT for a while. He was actually in their developmental thing from 2010 to 2013 under the name Derek Bateman, which I think is his real name. I could be wrong. No, it's not. No, that's not. But that's what his name was in WWE. So he was in seasons 4 and 5 of NXT back when it was that shitty competition show. But he was a bright spot in it. He obviously has, he's a strong personality, good wrestler, et cetera, et cetera. He made the transition to NXT developmental when it became that for about a year. According to him in various interviews, and I'll get to a quote of his in a second. Basically, it was a scenario where the people who were in charge were replaced by other people, and the people who had signed him and had his back were gone.
Yeah.
And new people with their own vision were in.
Yeah.
He had a small handful of matches up on the main roster, and they never amounted to anything. He said on his release, and he's got a great perspective about everything, and it's easier when you've achieved some degree of success after the fact.
Exactly.
To look back and say, okay, this was good,
yeah,
and I'm okay with it. He says, this is business, and at the time where I was, I would have released me too. especially considering I was kind of on the road, but not really. And then I was kind of in developmental, but not really. And then someone takes over a position of power. They put different guys in charge, and you're not somebody's guy. You're just floating in outer space. You're trying, and you're striving, and you're doing everything you can. But if it's not in the cards, it's not going to be in the cards. You have your dream job, and in the end, it becomes a nightmare. And then you get fired. You're kind of like, what was that for? If I didn't have a change, I probably would have been fired from WWE when they had their release 2016 with those guys. If I was still there, just stock lost, low to mid card. If I didn't have a change, I wouldn't be the guy I am today, which is a really important lesson to learn.
Yeah.
Is that sometimes you have to hit the
rock bottom essentially. Yeah.
In order to get back on top.
He was signed by TNA following this.
Yes.
Took on the new persona, Ethan Carter III. He was some sort of relative kayfabe
nephew
of Dixie Carter.
Right.
And he, in the time he's been in TNA, he's been wildly successful.
He's one of their centerpieces now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Two-time TNA World Heavyweight Champion. I sort of got a kick out of this because you guys probably all know we're not big TNA guys.
Yeah.
But I love all their little gimmick names for things. So apparently he won something called Feast or Fired.
That's like their Money in the Bank briefcase, but you get the contract and either it's...
You either get a world... it says here, World Tag Team Championship contract. Maybe he got a contract as opposed to being fired.
Yeah, it's one of the two, I think.
Okay. TNA Joker's Wild.
I have no idea what that is.
The TNA World Title Series.
I assume that's some sort of tournament.
And the Bound for Glory Playoffs.
Tournament, I think.
Okay, there you go.
I don't know. So, I don't watch TNA.
Yeah. So he's done really good for himself.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's so funny because I get easily... I don't even know. He's 30. I think he's 33. Prime age to go back to the WWE.
I know.
If it ever comes to that, I imagine if he wanted to, he could.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it's like, man, if he's doing good for himself in TNA, you know, the world's his oyster.
Would he want to go from being in one of the top spots in TNA to just going back to NXT?
Right, exactly. Yeah.
So.
Number four.
Four.
Drew Galloway. You mentioned him before.
Yeah.
Man, what a turnaround. It's insane. Like, so he was around when we sort of started when we were doing Tree of Woe.
Yeah, 2010, 2011.
And he stuck around through 2013. He's one of these dudes who, man, they did not use him properly at all. And it became obvious the second he was released.
Yeah. So he made a couple of appearances on WWE TV in 2007 before being sent to OVW and Florida Championship Wrestling.
Right.
He returned to the main roster in 2009 as the Chosen One.
Yes.
Drew McIntyre.
Yeah.
And feuded with R-Truth and John Morrison, and he eventually beat John Morrison for the Intercontinental title at TLC 2009. And then he had some thing where he was Vince's Chosen One, and so Vince would do whatever he could to... You know, keep him from losing the belt or losing matches. If he lost matches, he'd expunge the loss from the record books and
stuff
like that.
Which you would think is like the recipe for hopping in the main event scene at some point.
I know. So he had some feuds with Matt Hardy and Kofi Kingston. And then by the time 2012 rolled around, he was in NXT's tournament to decide their first champion, losing to Seth Rollins in the semifinals. Mm-hmm. So in the span of 3 years, he went from Vince's Chosen One.
IC title guy.
Yeah, to essentially being demoted to NXT.
And losing to Seth Rollins in the semifinals. he formed the three-man band with Heath Slater and Jinder Mahal in 2013, and they had some comical success.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't even really call it success, because you can always tell those kind of guys are just waiting to be released.
I know.
It's like the entire SmackDown tag division.
I know.
Milling about, waiting to be released.
Drew got his wish and was released from his contract on June 12th, 2014. And pretty much immediately, he went out on the indie scene and started picking up all sorts of championship belts.
I remember watching, because everybody, the week after, he landed in ICW, which was, I think, his stomping grounds.
Yeah.
And he cut this, blistering promo, and it was like, seriously, the WWE just got rid of this guy?
I know.
That's insane.
I know.
That's crazy.
I know. So he made his debut for Evolve August 8th, 2014, where he defeated Chris Hero for the Evolve title. In March of the following year, he beat Johnny Gargano for Dragon Gate USA's Open the Dragon Gate title. And he held on to those titles until he finally lost both of them to Timothy Thatcher, and by the time he lost the Evolve title, he was the longest reigning Evolve champ to date.
Yeah.
He won the WCPW title on November of last year. And then in TNA, he beat Matt Hardy on March 15th, 2015, to claim the TNA world title. And it was interesting. I remember watching, I just happened to watch the Impact after he won the belt.
I know you're talking about, yeah, because I watched this too. Yeah.
He opens the show with this promo saying he's going to be the first traveling world champ since Ric Flair. And he's going to defend the belt, independent shows across the world.
Which I thought was a great idea.
In the U.S. Yeah, it was fantastic.
And then how long after that did they job him out to Lashley?
89 days later.
Hey, okay, so like about 3 months later, he lost the title. See, this was like one of my problems with TNA, is that you've got this stud winning your title, and he makes this bold proclamation about being the first traveling world champion since Ric Flair. He should have your title for a long time.
Yeah, and you should give him the opportunity to do that.
Right,
go
exactly.
Go to have him go to Evolve carrying that TNA title and defend it.
Yeah.
You know? Have him go to Ring of Honor maybe not Ring of Honor. I don't know did TNA and Ring of Honor used to have like a working relationship?
Ooh, I don't know.
For some reason I thought they did. That could be wrong.
I don't know.
Or have him go to Pro Wrestling Guerrilla. I know he's wrestled with Pro Wrestling Guerrilla since his time in the Indies, but he wasn't TNA champ. Just have him go to these various promotions and defend your title.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
It'd be awesome.
Instead, he lost it to Slammiversary to Bobby Lashley, ending his reign, like you said, at 89 days. But still, he's a beast on the independent circuit. Again, it's like, man, you know, they really didn't. Sometimes it just feels like the WWE just...
Sometimes it feels
extinguishes
like they
the passion out of people.
Well, it seems like they don't know what they have sometimes.
Yeah.
They have these guys that have a ton of talent.
Mm-hmm.
And then I don't know if it's because of Triple H's attitude of everybody having their role or what it is exactly.
Right.
Or, you know, it seems like it could be something completely random that gets wrestlers out of Vince's good graces.
Yeah. Well, you heard about the Braun Strowman thing, right? Though when he said world title match. No, he's instead of saying world title match, he said world title shot. Instead of world title match.
And they got a shouting match backstage, yeah.
Oh, I didn't hear they got a shouting match.
Well, that was a story we heard was that, what was it?
I heard Vince was pissed. I didn't hear about the shouting match.
Yeah.
Okay, what was...
Well, somebody's... Shoot, where was it from? Well, I guess when the shouting match, it was just Vince yelling at Braun to say it a certain way.
Jeez. Relax, Vince. Let's see here. Number three.
Three.
The Hardys.
So, so
we have these extensive notes right here where we detailed.
But for the Hardys, it's kind of unnecessary because
it says
their accomplishments in WWE are too vast.
What they did in WWE.
Pretty much everything.
Everything. What they've done since they've left. Delete.
Pretty much.
So it's kind of been this stunning turnaround with the Hardys. As we said, look, they did it all in the WWE. They started out very young, like basically legally. As soon as you can start working for the WWE, they were doing that. I was watching this Raw from 1996. The very first, I want to get this right, it was either the first match as Stone Cold or it was one of the first matches as the Ringmaster. I think it was the Ringmaster. Austin fought Matt Hardy, and he looked like a baby. And Ringmaster, of course, didn't even look like Stone Cold. So, you know, obviously they were, you know, huge tag champions in the Attitude Era. And they left for a bit, came back. Jeff Hardy won the WWE Championship. Matt Hardy was hot thanks to his feud with Edge and Lita in 2005, 2006. Mm-hmm. And then he went to a different brand. Go ahead.
I don't mean to interrupt you, but I guess it wasn't a shouting match. It was just Braun saying title shot and McMahon must have been at Gorilla yelling at the monitor, don't say title shot, say title match. This is Mick Foley was on Lillian Garcia's podcast, and that's where the story comes from.
Oh, okay. All right.
I knew it was some podcast thing. I couldn't remember exactly what it was.
So okay.
I was going to make sure you get the correct information.
Yeah, sure. So going back to the Hardys, they basically did it all. I mean, Matt never held the world championship. He held the ECW championship.
He was the
U.S. champion. He was very strong.
Cruiserweight champion,
I believe.
Yeah,
he was a very strong United States champion.
They had the tag titles. Bunches of times.
Bunches of times they feuded against each other. They teamed with each other, obviously. They basically did it all in the WWE. I mean, with the exception of Matt Hardy never getting the world title, but he got the ECW title and the U.S. title and whatever else. They were there for a long time. They did a lot.
Yes.
They did a lot. at a certain point, you know, they left. I mean, they left a couple times, but the last time they left, Jeff Hardy was going through some personal problems. You know, yep. He's been pretty upfront about his addiction issues. He seems to be on the straight and narrow, and he has been for a little while. They found a landing pad in TNA.
Yep.
Where, you know, TNA, one reason why we really like the idea of TNA being around, besides providing competition, besides providing a paycheck for people, is that it can provide a paycheck for people who need a stable, like, place.
Yeah.
You know, like, Kurt Angle had addiction issues. He went to TNA and had a long, fruitful career there.
Yeah, I mean, I think
without the rigors of the WWE
schedule. Yeah, I think that's what it is, you know, TNA has their TV tapings in one place, by and large.
Yeah.
I mean, they've taped elsewhere, but usually it's at, I think, Universal in Orlando.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
That's where, for the vast majority of their history, if not the entirety of it, they've taped their TV show at that venue.
Correct.
And they've toured nationally here and there, mm-hmm. but I don't believe they're touring now.
Right.
I don't think they
do
house shows or anything.
Yeah.
And that is great for wrestlers, like you mentioned, Kurt Angle,
mm-hmm.
Jeff Hardy, who need that stability.
Yeah.
And you know, granted it took him a while cause Jeff had that infamous incident. I think at Victory Road a few years back against Sting where he obviously came to the ring.
Yeah. Inebriated.
But you know, it's in the last couple of years, Matt Hardy won the TNA title.
Right.
Introduced the broken character.
That's been sort of the most significant thing because over the past couple of years, you'd always heard little bits and pieces about how the WWE wanted to bring Jeff back.
Yeah.
And now they, you know, what we hear is they're interested in bringing both of them back, largely because of the broken universe. And it has been an absolute joy to watch this career resurgence and this, you know, very inspired sort of take on pro wrestling with Matt Hardy's, the Matt Hardy driven broken Matt Hardy character. And you know, the surrounding storylines for that. It's been something that has, you know, sort of reinvigorated TNA. It's led to a ratings increase,
giving them some mainstream exposure, which was necessary.
Right. Absolutely. And, their contract is coming up soon with TNA
this month. Yeah.
There's some speculation as to what they're going to do after that. But they don't need the WWE. You know, Jeff has said he would like to wrestle The Undertaker at Mania for his retirement match or something in a high-profile manner like that.
Mm-hmm.
It also, it would almost be kind of a shame if they went to WWE at this point, unless the WWE said, this is specifically what we want you for, so the WWE can have their broken storyline and let the wrestling fans out there get a big kick out of this. And then we'll close the book on it, and you guys can go your way and do what you want. We'll induct you in the Hall of Fame or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, right now, it seems like TNA is beneficial for the Hardys simply because it seems like they have complete creative freedom.
They let them do whatever they want.
And they're not going to get that in WWE.
And if they have, if Jeremy Borash is the guy who can channel that creative energy into, like, you know,
can manifest it visually.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Then if he doesn't come along, then who knows how your product or how your vision is going to be compromised under the WWE. I'd like to think the best. I'd love to think that we can get a Bray Wyatt, broken Matt Hardy feud. I don't really see it happening. But I would be very excited if they did re-sign the Hardys just to see what would happen.
Yeah.
Worst case scenario, it doesn't work. They go their separate ways and we get, you know, get him back to his old ways shortly after that. But I'm always a fan of giving it a try at least.
Absolutely.
But they obviously don't need it.
Nope.
Number
two,
Bobby Lashley.
Another wrestler who had a really stellar WWE career.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, absolutely. And it wasn't even that. He wasn't there that long.
No.
He was there for all of 3 years.
Debuted in September of 2005 after some time spent in OVW.
Right.
In those 3 years, as you mentioned, he was a two-time ECW champion.
Right.
He won the U.S. championship once. He did wrestle Cena for the WWE title.
Mm-hmm.
Lost.
Lol. Cena wins.
I don't really want to remember that.
Oh, the Trump bit?
Yeah.
He represented at WrestleMania.
I know, yeah, I remember that.
He represented Trump.
In a hair versus hair match versus Umaga, who was representing Vince.
Yeah.
At WrestleMania 23.
Lashley won, which meant Trump. But that led, I think, to Trump, because Stone Cold was the guest
referee, so Trump shaved Vince McMahon's head.
Yeah, and then Trump ate a stunner.
Yep.
So, yeah, but that was, you know, very high-profile match for Lashley.
And then
he was the first person to break Chris Masters' master lock. Remember Chris Masters?
Vaguely.
Like, I'm not going to suggest anything. I just remember Chris Masters pre, well, was it a wellness, I don't know if it was a wellness policy violation or pre simply wellness policy. And then he came back and he was like smaller.
Yeah.
But like saggier because mm-hmm. when you do that, it was just sad. It was like, oh man, he's got weird boobies now. Poor Chris Masters. Hey, I think he's still wrestling though. I've talked some shit about Chris Masters now. I always really liked Chris Masters.
Okay.
I always really liked him because he had the narcissist thing, but he had actual personality.
Yeah.
He would come out posing and they would have him either spinning around or the cameras would be going around him or something. And he had just the look of like an asshole, but he also had a lot of charisma and he would like pay people or he would like offer money to break his master lock, which is a great name for a submission.
That's when I was not watching.
You were not watching
wrestling at all.
I'll have to find a pay-per-view and we'll sit and watch it. And he was a very entertaining dude. I remember there being a period where he was gone and then he came back and I was like, he looks like a dude who changed either his diet or I don't want to say he was on steroids because that would be rude, but he had the appearance of a guy who had changed something in the way he worked out. And he was all of a sudden sackier.
Yeah.
He wasn't quite as plump.
So Bobby Lashley was released.
Yeah, back to Bobby Lashley.
Yeah. In February of 2008, after being on the shelf with injury for 6 months or so.
Yeah, there's some like debate out there about... So according to him, on the record, it was a mutual breakup. There's some speculation that there was some problems backstage with certain people. But after he left,
he started doing MMA,
and he has a stellar record. He's
he
got
has
a
record
and
of
two
15
record.
And two.
Yeah.
He's
currently with Bellator.
Yeah.
And it's like, granted, this isn't the UFC or anything, but you know, fighting 17 guys and beating 15 of them is pretty good.
Yeah.
I would think.
I mean, his last loss was in 2012.
My goodness gracious. While he's moonlighting as an MMA guy, or his day job as MMA guy, he's moonlighting as a wrestler with TNA, again, with Ethan Carter III being one of their centerpieces of their main event picture. He's their current TNA world champion.
Just recently beating Eddie Edwards, right?
That's right, yeah. Let's see here. I'm going to list these other TNA accomplishments here because they make me laugh. Let's see here. He won the TNA King of the Mountain Championship. The four-time what?
King of the Mountain, that's the belt they had for a little bit that Jeff Jarrett brought in, right? When they were trying to do that Global Force Wrestling crossover.
Is that what that was?
I thought so.
Or is that what they changed? Maybe, because King of the Mountain. Okay, what was... So they had a Legends belt? It was like they had like their main title for like the guys who could actually wrestle. And they had like the title for guys like Sting.
Yeah.
And like other guys.
Yeah,
like
I don't think that's the King of the Mountain belt.
Foley. Okay. I thought they transitioned that belt into a different belt.
Oh, maybe they did.
I'm
not aware
sure
of it.
The comments will correct us on it. Yes. We're not TNA guys.
No, he is a four-time TNA World Heavyweight Champion, the current TNA champion. He is a one-time X Division champion.
Yeah.
He won the 2009 TNA Championship Series.
Yeah.
And 2015 TNA Joker's Wild. Again, no idea what that is. I'm sorry.
Sometimes it's more fun not to know.
I know.
Because then we can just clown. My voice is literally on its last leg.
I know. We have one more entry, Steve.
All right. Number one.
One.
Kenny Omega.
So he was in WWE Developmental Deep South Wrestling from 2005 to 2006. Never mm-hmm. wrestled on the main roster.
Yep.
And then he requested his release from the promotion from WWE in August of 2006. And since then, he's been highly critical of Bill DeMott, who was one of the trainers there.
Okay.
But he also credited Dave Taylor with helping him teach the basics of wrestling. Because before this, I think his only prior experience had been wrestling up in Winnipeg.
Oh, interesting.
And so following his release from WWE, he went back to, I want to say it was called PCW.
Okay.
And then from there, he has wrestled pretty much all over
everywhere.
The world.
Everywhere.
Gaining the most prominence, especially following his 2009 Battle of Los Angeles victory in PWG, became the PWG champion.
Yeah.
He's wrestled a lot in Japan, wrestled a bunch in DDT Pro, had a brutal, crazy match against Kota Ibushi
in
2012.
He also wrestled a 9-year-old girl
and
a blow-up doll.
A blow-up doll.
That's right.
And after that, he went to New Japan Pro Wrestling and is pretty much a match of the year machine.
Oh, yeah, dude. And New Japan does it right, man, because he puts on this brutal six-star match against Okada at Wrestle Kingdom. And they just, I mean, I know he had a contract coming up, but, you know, take some time off, heal up, be better, you know? And so he'll be back probably pretty shortly. Do we know when has it been confirmed when the next time he's going to be?
Yeah, the Honor Rising.
The Honor Rising. That's next right. Week. It's going to be the Honor Rising. Oh, fuck. That's next week. Are we? Is that confirmed? That's on the on New Japan World?
Yes, 26th and 27th, I believe. Okay. 27th, 28th.
Awesome.
So some of the accomplishments he's achieved in New Japan. He has won the junior heavyweight title.
Yes.
Won the Intercontinental title.
Yes.
He was a junior tag champion with Kota Ibushi. And he won the never open weight tag titles with the Young Bucks. And as you touched on, his match with Okada was the first match to be awarded 6 stars by the Wrestling Observer's Dave Meltzer.
Let me ask you something.
What?
So he said recently that his friend declined to sign with the WWE because he wanted to wrestle Kenny Omega. It's fairly obvious it's Kota Ibushi. Had the WWE rolled out the red carpet for Kota Ibushi, and he signed. Do you think that would have influenced Kenny Omega?
Maybe.
Possibly.
Although it seems like Kenny really, 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 really wants to wrestle AJ Styles.
Yeah.
Really.
Oh, yeah. There's that, too. And that didn't sway him.
Which could have happened if, in theory.
Yeah.
If his contract was up a bit at the end of January.
Yeah.
He could have signed February 1st.
Yeah.
And he could have been inserted into a program on SmackDown right away for a match against AJ Styles. Entirely possible.
Yeah.
If that was enough to sway him, I don't know.
Yeah. Hmm. You're probably right. Entirely
possible. I don't know.
Yeah. And then, you know, we made this joke on an episode, I don't know, 2 weeks ago, where we said, hey, Kenny, you want a reason why you shouldn't come to WWE? Because AJ Styles is going to fight Shane McMahon at WrestleMania. I kind of stand by that, too.
Oh, yeah.
It feels like Kenny has some unfinished business.
Yes. It seems like he really wants to win the IWGP heavyweight title.
Yeah, it's one of those things where, you know what, AJ needs to take good care of himself. And
at WrestleMania 34, main event.
Exactly.
Can be Kenny Omega versus AJ Styles.
Exactly. By that time, AJ should be on Raw, because Kenny needs to be on Raw.
Yeah.
He needs to be a Raw guy. I'm sorry he does, though. Triple threat. How about this? For somehow, some way, you get the Universal title over to SmackDown, bring the world title where it belongs to Raw.
Okay.
And then you get a triple threat. AJ, no, Fatal 4-Way.
Yeah, I knew this was
coming. AJ, Finn,
Shinsuke.
Kenny Omega. Like, 8-star match.
Well, you know,
skip 7 stars.
If Kota Ibushi and Kenny Omega either wrestle together against each other in New Japan for this next year, maybe Kota Ibushi would be a free agent. Bring him in, too.
Yeah.
Fatal 5-Way.
Exactly. Oh, and
10-star match.
How about this? Make it a 6-pack challenge with Mojo Rawley.
So you just ruined it all.
Yeah, I did. That's it for Count Out. Thank you for tuning in. We really appreciate it. And until next time, we'll talk to you guys later.
Bye.